Now this is Channel 2 Right, and I'm setting up for Suzanne. This Monday, the 17th of April, 72, about noon. Channel 2 Right, and I'm setting up for Suzanne this Monday, the 17th of April, about noon. Channel 2 Right, and I'm setting up for Suzanne this Monday, the 17th of April, 72, around noon.
I'm in good spirits, if that's what you mean. I feel pressed, but not Freudian.
You say you are in good spirits?
Yeah.
You mean you are now?
Yeah. Well, I have been. I mean, off and on, I feel it, but mostly I've been in good spirits. That's partly because of Jim. He's being gay, well then it makes me more comfortable.
Jim?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean Jim. Jim.
Well, I live with him. Yeah, he's kind of a barometer sometimes.
He can tell how things are going. And
yeah, and well, of course, see, if things are going good with him, then he's just, anything I do is okay. He kind of enters into it, So.
Well, what I get by that? I mean, he took an interest in this.
Well, put it this way. Let's see. He doesn't say anything about it. I mean, every once in a while, I get the resentment kind of builds up, and he says, you care more about God and faith than you do about me, and you're never here, and he says, I only get to see at supper time, and just like that,
Are you kidding him?
No, he's not kidding me. He means it. He gets real upset about it sometimes. And then when he feels good, then he never says anything about it. It doesn't bother him.
So he's been feeling good.
Yeah, he's been feeling good, and I have too, so it just works out nice.
That is, you can take a right smart
function. Yeah. He rode Bubba the other evening, and I swear he floated on air all that night and the next day. And just, he's just walking on air.
Is that right?
Yeah, and he's got that prostrate problem.
Who has?
Jim does. He's got it. He went to Dr. Orr, and Dr. Orr put him on antibiotics and told him not to drink tea or coffee.
Or ride a horse.
Well, Jim didn't tell me about riding a horse. I asked him, I said, did you tell Dr. Orr you rode a horse and a motorcycle? He said, no, because I was afraid he'd tell me not to.
Like me riding a tractor. We're a pair.
So, what it is, I think, is he's been working at that thesis, so he sits down all the time, and he's not used to doing that.
Yeah.
And then there is a motorcycle and the horse, so he's about through with the thesis, and he's cut out the motorcycle, and he only rides Bubba every other day. Driving out here, I make these lists of things that I think I, want to fill you in on. Last week, I decided, well, I'd get that thing for Kirkpatrick over with.
Sit down,
okay. I worked on that, and I took the thing on Miss Mary, and I thought, well, maybe I'll just sort of put it in a vaguely story form, and still try not to do any violence to Miss Mary. So I finally finished it, and Jim read it. That's the first time he's ever read anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, it's the first time I've given him anything to read. And he laughed at a couple of parts of it, and he said, you better change that a little bit. So I got to class, and I was sitting there, and this boy reached over, and he grabbed it, and he read it. And when he got through reading it, he said, you got a raft of people in there. That was the last I heard. And I chickened out. I didn't give it to Kirkpatrick. I thought I'd see him in private first. Because, you see, that's what he wants. He wants to put it on his desk in class and wants to read it and let the class work.
Oh, he hadn't even seen it.
Yeah. Well, he has now. I left it with him.
But God Almighty, well, what are you jumping about?
Hmm?
He hadn't even been after you.
No. Well, yeah. It's just that, you know, I've got to do it, and it just worries me.
Well,
what I mean is, you see, I want to get through that so I can go on to something else. I'm tired.
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, I thought he'd got on to it.
Oh, no. He doesn't get on to anybody. He doesn't even remember me when I come in his office. You know, he just kind of looks at me for a minute. I say, I'm in your class Thursday night. And then he remembers.
Well, what, you haven't got anything to story?
I know it.
I was just in hopes he'd chew you.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't do that with people.
He doesn't chew anybody?
No.
Well, I never heard of him chewing anybody.
Now the class will. Of course, it's all, you know, it's all anonymous in class. And they'll get on to the story.
But you don't have anything. You don't have any grievance at all, Faye. It's just all anticipation.
No, I don't have any grievance with him. It's just, you know, that's it. It's anticipation, you know.
Are they pretty sharp in a class?
Oh, God, yes. Now, that's something I saw Thursday night that I hadn't really been watching. And some of them are real, to me, real perceptive. In other words, they see, they read it. When they read something, they read it a lot more closely than I do. Like one boy in the, brought up something on the killers. He said that it's just, you just see, you can't confront evil. All you can do is report it. In that story, you know, you can't do anything about it. You just have to look at it and say, well, you know, these two guys walked in, they're going to kill the fellow. And, so some of them, when they say something, you feel like they are saying something.
Yeah.
Now the others, like Rick Mumford, for instance, in every story, his battle cry is, I don't get to get into the person's mind. You don't show me. It's all told to me. And all. And he never, I've never heard him given a distinction between telling and what he calls rendering. That's the term they use. He just says, you know, in the first half of the story, it's all told to you. But he doesn't say what he means or what he's referring to. So you just, you know, you're left with the first half of the story, and you don't know which first half he means or what he means in it. And I can't make the distinction. I mean, just listening to the stories.
Yeah.
Between being told and being having it rendered. I don't know what they mean by that yet.
You needed love working over.
Yeah. Well, I can give that thing to Kirkpatrick, and I can say just exactly what the class is going to say about it. You see, as a story, it's not. It's not anywhere close to it. The whole last part about Marvin and the rumble seat, they'd probably say, you know, don't need that at all.
Well, yes, you do.
Well, I'd say you do. They'd say you don't. They'd
but
say
you're
going to
justify it.
Yeah.
Let's see, that if I work with it, then I have to.
Everything you do has to be delivered.
Yeah, right.
And that's been the trouble so far, you see. You're just recording, but you don't know what in the hell you're recording. God, I hope, I'm disappointed, Suzanne. I thought they'd draw blood.
Well, they do in class. If you haven't read in class, I mean, that's all it is. White chicken now.
Well, chicken out. You
well, I know that,
you
but I do.
You are the dog blood. I mean, that's all part of it, see?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you go in there for, to get them to work you over. Isn't it?
I'd think so. That's what you're asking for, not a pat on the
shoulder. That's what you need. Mm-hmm. That's what you need, somebody to work you over. And it's hard to get. And if Kurt Patrick can get those fellas in there to work you over.
Oh, Lord. Well, that's what they do.
Let them work you over. You see, one reason I wanted you to work with these writers was so your statements would be more interesting. See, your statements aren't interesting at all. They're just not interesting.
Well, that's where I start biting my lips, because I know it.
You've got a lot of nice things in there, but you got no statements. No statements. And you gotta have it. You gotta have those statements. You see.
Yeah.
My objection to the writers is not the statements, you see, or their point of view. It's they don't themselves see Miss Guthrie. They never know. They don't know anybody. They got the skill without the content. That's the only, small feud I'd have. I couldn't have a big feud with them because I'm not too much myself, you see.
I've got the content without the skill. Got the other way around. Part of the content.
Well.
Oh, you see, I'd like to go ahead and work with that, and yet sometimes I feel like, just running around visiting people, I feel like it's not played out. I'm supposed to ought to be a little bit past that now. I mean, I can do it, but it's...
That's right.
You're right.
You gotta move on.
But I've got to do something more now. And that's also why last week I stuck with the tape. But even there, I'm not real sure I'm getting too far with it.
Yes, I haven't studied that tape. I studied the last one when you were out here last. And I can show you my little breakdown of it. It's pure laughter. And what I did was hold it open, and she came through with one little perception after another about Theo or Louise Graham. She's perceptive, very much like you are. Those things just come to her. And I never realized that. And I think that's really, you see, if you let them work you over and draw blood a little bit, you don't know how much blood I've lost in my time. I mean, and you see, when I'm here, you see, I get pulled in all these directions. I get a whole class after me. You see, I get the whole class against me. Huh?
Yeah, I mean...
how long would you last like that? Huh?
Not too long at all.
Yes, I can take it. I can take it a good while, the whole shebang. And
well, you see, that would bother me more than anything else. It's, feeling them, the whole class. It's just...
Well, I wouldn't elect that. I wouldn't choose it. But
it happens, I guess, sometimes.
I've sometimes baited them. Well, anyhow, I'm not doing it now. I don't have energy for it. But now, and then you see, I get the writers pulling me. I get some of those little critical statements of Emily Sue Anderson, you see. They just pull on me. In a awful way. And I never realized just how much that was. You see, I go back to that. You see, you have those tensions. I never realized what tensions were. Well, the tensions, you see, have to be in the person who's working with the material. Otherwise, it might as well be a cobbler. And maybe a cobbler has them. I don't know. Good one. They just pull you. And it's, why don't you work with some of those bright chaps in there? Let them work it over. Kirkpatrick, he won't say anything much, will he? I mean, they'll finally get you anyhow. You can work with them privately.
Yeah.
And tell them just tear into it. That's what you want, Suzanne.
Well, yeah, I'd like to do that, but it's just, I still feel this, you know, going out and visiting, I'd almost like to kind of just leave that for a while and just work with this other. Because
I think you're going to have to get somebody after you and burn you. I don't believe it's going to do it, buddy.
Well, she's got this, you know, material. And it's just, I can see. Somebody in the class could work you over, could help.
You see, it's almost like this little girl, the freshman, last term, little short girl, and she had her in the physical education class and walked over to the place I was in, entertained me for half an hour or so. And she lost out. And, on a paper afterwards, I said, this thing is nothing to it. It's perfectly flat. After your talk in the office the other day, if you hadn't talked to me over there, I'd think you were just a sort of half-witted. On the next paper, she hit it. She hit it hard. And then her mother had a stroke or something, and she retired again. Well, what she told me was, I said, now you don't want to stick around on this campus, you want to get out. She said, I get out. I get out all over this place on Saturdays and Sundays with my boyfriend. See, as long as you hide your head down there in the keep ever, you stick out, you're not going to get anywhere. You go down there and they give you $40 and feed you and go out and hug you. You got to do more than that, man. The world is not made like that. I'd leave her bike thing going.
Well,
I know somebody is running around.
Well, just be patient. I'll go back and see him, and he will have read it. He won't tell me. He's not that sort of person.
Well, what were you feeling peevish about?
I wasn't feeling peevish about anything.
Well, you said you were.
I felt pressed.
No, you didn't.
And what now?
You felt peevish.
Wait now, what am I thinking? I remember the note.
He was hoping that he was on board. He's been waiting for this.
Okay, I remember the note, yeah. Okay, well, what that was, that in the class, you see, it's so different from, I don't know how to say it. It's partly its temperament, I guess. And I'm not used to people, you know, who just come out and nasty things they say. But it just, some of them are, you know, just strike me as being really egotistical, and it just bothers me. And that's what makes me sour and peevish. And what it is, partly, it's the same thing I ran into your class. I get mad because I can't do it. So I say I'm mad at them instead of just mad because, you know, I haven't done it. Just this reaction.
It leaves me feeling sour.
Yeah, I get home and I just tell Jim, just leave me alone.
And snappish.
Yeah.
And disgruntled.
Yeah. Well, it's like I say, you see Rick Mumford gets up there and he says, I don't get into her mind. I want to see her mind. And he doesn't say what he means. And it just...
Well, you see, the trouble is that chiropractor doesn't teach him to say those things. You see, you know how to do that. You can work it out. But Kurt Packer didn't teach you.
No. Well, and I guess one thing, you see the stories, well, Thursday night it was kind of funny. The first story, most of them, or no, I won't say most, but a lot of them, you see, they are... The first one he read was an initiation sort of thing, and if it's some sort of initiation story, it's got to deal with sex, in one form or another. And he read the story, and the first part, now see, I'm not being exact, but Kirkpatrick said again and again, the boy has pulled off the hard part, where this woman, you know, this 40-year-old woman, just sort of makes love to a 12-year-old boy in the back seat of the car. And Kurt Patty says he's pulled that off.
And it worked?
Yeah, it worked. He says, now what he hadn't done is say, well, how come he hasn't set this love that the little boy begins to feel for this woman and, you know, the relationship there. He hadn't set that against anything. The story started out and he says, I'm Bob's old best friend. He's got a new best friend, and because I'm his old best friend, they invited me to go on a picnic. And his father was a salesman. He bought a new car every year, so and they go on this picnic. And he talks about all the things he did. They had a big lunch, and he says he couldn't believe they had such a lunch for just the picnic. His family didn't do those kind of things. But all through the day, you know, he got a little present like the rest of them, but he felt apart. He was the old best friend and just sort of on the outskirts. And the mother of the other boy just took special, you know, tried to make him feel at ease. You know. And then in the car going back home, he has this scene. And then at the end, you have about a year later, his old best friend's brother comes up and says, my mother says that you love her and she loves you. Another boy who's there tells him, you know, what the circumstances were, and this makes him feel better. But they criticize the story, and they say what's wrong with it, and where it falls down, and where people quit listening to it. But they don't seem to be able to ever say, you know, what you could do with it.
Yeah.
And the second story was always talking about it.
They get awful subjects, don't they?
Yeah. I haven't heard a light story in there yet.
Light touch.
Yeah, not one. Except, well, this one scene that the fellow handled it lightly, not light like we mean, but he did it. It was easy. It came off.
Yeah.
But the one and only story I've heard in there that did have a light touch was this horrible thing. It just, you know, it had the whole class in an uproar because it was funny, but it was all just gross. That's the only word for it. It's Latin pornography. And it was funny. And it, you know, had the whole class probably falling out of their chairs. But it's the only thing. And one boy, when he got through and he he said, he's the one who made the comment about the killers. He said, well, it's not exactly what we do, but it sure was good. So they don't really want something live. They just, well, of course, that was different. But.
Yours will be so tame, they won't have any say about it. <know. laughs>
Well, Frank O'Connor can write those kind of stories. Like that, the little one, the drunkard. Have you ever read that, where the little boy's father, he goes, his father's loves funerals, and he starts out that their neighbor died, Mr. Delaney across the street, who used to come over and talk to his father about the newspaper, and Mr. Delaney would give him all the news behind the news. And his father was just astounded at Mr. Delaney's perception and insight and privilege to be his friend, that this man would come over and tell him all the news. Well, he died, and his father decided to go to the funeral. Well, that was a danger signal, because the little boy's mother knew that if he went to the funeral, he'd stop by the pub. And if he stopped by the pub, he'd take a drink. And if he took one drink, he'd feel bad about it, and he'd take another one to forget that, and by then he was lost, and he'd go on a 3-week drunk. And he said his father would sit down at the table and figure out how much money he saved by not drinking at the pubs. And he'd talk about, you know, what fools men were who drank and all. And then the little boy says, and this was another bad sign, because pretty soon his spiritual pride would get the best of him, and he'd go take a drink to celebrate. And there he'd go again. So he sets this up, the kind of scene, and so they go to the funeral, and the mother sends the little boy as sort of a check on the father. And they go to the funeral, and his best friend goes with him, who is another danger signal, because when they get together, you know, they start celebrating. So they go, and he talks about how big a funeral it was, and how many carriages and aldermen and priests, and he leaves before they quite finish at the cemetery. And the cabmen say, you know, how's it going? He says, all over now, bar the last prayers, and they make a beeline for the pub. And this story, you know, he gets his drink, and he puts it behind him on the bar, and he just, you know, he's savoring the moment, and the little boy drinks it. Stoned out of his mind. So the father and the best friend have to drag him up the street, you know, where all their neighbors live, and this little boy is just, you know, reeling back and forth and singing and cussing out the women on the street and all. It's funny, it's light, the whole thing, but it's just... But I never heard one like that, no.
Well, I'm going to tell you, we've been reading these stories as experience, and I haven't had anyone to work with it critically, you see. It's just with freshmen and beginners. It's all the same to them. They just read the experience and read the story. You get no statement from them. But some of those stories you can read perfectly well, very nicely. They don't seem made up at all. Now they are arranged, you see. They're organized. Mm.
That seems to be it, partly. Right? What they're talking about is that, you know, they're organizing it. They don't think of it in those terms. But
well, I mean, it has some direction. It has to have, you know,
yeah.
It's fiction. Reporting, it has to have direction, you see. That's art, too. You don't give it just as it happens. You it happens, you see, according to your mind, has to have a pattern. You have to be conscious of it. Well, And yes, now you see, you've got the ingredients, the thing that happened.
Hmm.
Now that first part, you see, is the wrong. It's mechanical. Where you make your contact. You've got to state your direction in that first part.
Yeah.
And
well, the version I gave to him, I made an attempt at, and I see it doesn't work out very well. I don't think it would.
That's not really worked well. But
still, I go through it. I can see as soon as I get it finished, you know, where it needs to be reworked.
But out here, you don't want that.
Yeah, I hear you don't want it.
You just want it mechanical. Up to a point where you can see it. I wouldn't get it good. That's the best thing you've done. The cleanest piece of work you've done.
Coming out right now. I said, I feel like the wood job. I get through typing one of those, and I say, you know, it takes me a long time to type one of those out. You know, even if I do it rough, I think, well, here I go again. You know, I have to write down my thoughts too, and there's some typing to be attended to at the same time.
You got to type it so you can Xerox it clean.
Pages now, there's no telling what it's going to be.
You mean not that you've redone it?
Yeah. Oh, that's double spaced.
Does it have to be?
Hmm?
It
doesn't have to be anyway. Yeah, it does have to be double spaced. Brian. It's got to be readable because you see, he reads it out in class, so he's got to be able to read it right then and there without stumbling over it. Typographical errors and spelling.
Double spacing doesn't help the reading. Now, hand is in the way. Well, we'll have to wait for the.
Wait on Thursday.
We'll have to wait.
I told Carol Ann, I said, you know, the night I let him read this, I think I'll bring y'all along and carry me out.
I see you put up with me all the time, Clay.
You're different.
You're not
ill-tempered about it.
The hell, I never. I'm even waspish.
Well, not ill-tempered like you. I know, it's just different.
After all, he always smiles. He tears you up, but he always smiles.
If you get along with me, you ought to get along with anybody.
Well, I feel a disadvantage with him. I mean, more
some
so.
Some of those fellas, though, they're so vulgar. their minds, you wonder how they eat.
I know. I sat in the middle of three of them in class. That's it doesn't bother me sometimes, but there's this other girl, and they kept asking her about the reports they were getting from the guys in the gym. And just it just got pretty bad for a while.
Some of those people have been in my classes and have turned in stuff to me, and I tell them I can't handle it. I have no objection to it, except I can't work with them on that sort of material. I just tell them. And they either change or drop. And I just don't like it. You get enough healthy stuff to work with, you know. You don't have to have all that stuff. Well, anyhow.
You want some cake, guys?
Let me tell you, Suzanne. Well, I tell you, you're still so flabby. I don't know.
I know it.
Nothing you can do. I think of some of these things, and maybe, well, maybe we might get a little something done. I don't mind. I can't work with a jellyfish. You see, everywhere I go, I cause dissension. And I feel it. Everything I do. I'm not bragging about it. I'm just talking about what I'm accustomed to, the world I live in. It's all like that, even with a boy. Sometimes he won't speak to me. And I'd rather be able to see than to be able to feel comfortable. I haven't felt comfort in so long. Jack Long talks like, at least when this old president's gone, we'll have some peace. Well, what I want to write back, of course, some peace is all right. Some sort of peace is, who wants peace? Well, I don't want anyone, you know, just kicking me on the shin all the time. But you got to have something to make you see. Now you see, Cornwell, you could go into that. Jim's over there close to him, and you could find out what goes on. And it's you see, I can do these things without, you know, feeling really without taking sides.
Yeah.
Now I used to take sides. But it'd be pretty hard, you see, for me to take sides anymore. You see what you've got over there, the prospect of the provost. You see, he's the nigger in the woodpile, the devil. He's ambitious, of course, and all. But I think a large amount of it is he just don't see. You know, I heard him make a speech this morning on pollution. Well, he's against it. Everything they do over there is aimed at overcoming pollution. Pollution of the air, pollution of the water, pollution of anything. He's on Farming Home or something this morning. I taped it so I could hear it, watch it. Well, the thing about it is, he's come a long way since Accent 70, when he made a key speech that Thursday afternoon. And that Thursday afternoon was a key time. He's come a long way, but he hasn't come that way through the members of his departments. Because none of them sink. He don't want them to. None of them are against pollution. Or at least any more than they always were. The market bulletin came out. I saved it. I just clipped that in there. They said that the farmers had always been against pollution. Well, the damn dirty farmers, I've seen them. They're the nastiest people I've ever seen. They're against everything, including wildlife. They don't want anything living around. They want to be able to sweep the premises. That's what the old farmers were like. Well, you see, they kid themselves over there. When they get a man like Cornwell, I don't know Cornwell. And, I mean, I couldn't hire him or fire him. But when they get somebody like that who's mildly abrasive, they don't know what to do with it. Well, you see, it's the same way in the other department that I see. Those little Indians that were chopping, thinking people were going to chop their heads off a year or so ago, they're chopping other people's heads off now. They got their axe. And they'll chop too. They'll draw blood. And you see what
What they, you see, you don't have to worry about this. But see, I've come up many times. See, they won't promote me or even raise my salary. I make just what I made when I came here. You see, the primary teachers make more than I do. And, I don't have any love for them, but I don't care much, you see. And, I'm doing, my visibility is too short now, I can't, see them. Well, you see what they're doing? They are... It's right scary what they're doing. As I see it, from the little few glimpses I have.
You mean like that little note from Breedlaw that you got?
Huh?
You mean like the little note from Breedlaw that you got?
well, he's just sort of an on hanger so far, you see. He's not one of the main people.
But I mean, just that kind of direction that they're going in.
Well, that's a very small part of it. You see what they what they're doing. They are that little document on tenure from the president. Provided the occasion for him. And in it he said, you see, that tenure was a very simple thing for the individual.
Yeah, for the individual, but for the university it was.
Yes, it was exceedingly difficult. So they are making it exceedingly difficult to get tenure. That is, they are working there to safeguard the institution. They've always had the safeguard institution. And now they're coming up with new wrinkles. I mean, they are finding things that they are really making distinctions. So you say, how would they do it? You've got to see. See, you've got to publish, you've got to teach, you've got to not helping out with the Boy Scouts or the Chamber of Commerce or the First Baptist Church. There's not any such community anymore. What they mean by community is serving on the committees
or
in
the
departments,
yeah.
So that they never have to get their feet on the ground. You've got to publish in journals that they approve.
Scholarly journals.
Those particular scholarly journals where you get people just like that. So you see, you've got no room. You've got to follow the MLA style sheet. And I wouldn't follow that. You couldn't make you follow that MLA style sheet. I just simply couldn't bring myself to follow it. You see, you can take a little specimen of the style from the MLA style sheet or from any of their writings and then read it along with E.B. White. And what you've got now, you say, what's the difference? It's all good English. Accurate and correct, yes. But you see, they have loaded their style down so much with abstractions and with content that it's not even English any longer. And E.B. White has a much, you see, his draft is not nearly so heavy. But you got to write like that. Now you see what's, and then you see that's going from that to the writers like Mr. Kirkpatrick. You see, he's in the academic community. He can't go off and write like E.B. White anymore. E.B. White, sort of simple. He got to get more content, more thought, more information, more violence, more action, more theme. So that it spreads. You see, they're just like the law. You see, they're there. They're paid to be there. They live there. And they've got those particular ways of going about things, you see. And you can't escape it. You see, as you go along, you get more and more like it. Until pretty soon, you don't want to fool with any old crone like that, Jesse. You just take the idea and just let her go. So you get a sort of violence that kills people off. And it's rather hard to say, look at those humane people. And say, look at all the people they kill off. They kill them off. Because Guthrie can't survive with them. Now, if you're going to write a book on Emerson, you're going to have to learn a little bit more.
Yeah.
Now, where is that girl, Jim's sister, that knows so much about it? She Atlanta?
Masters.
Oh, God Almighty.
But I got a letter from her the other day. We got a letter, and she said for the first time, one of the very, very few times, she's had the students in her class talking to each other instead of just, you know, when one would talk to the instructor. And she said she's got herself into a situation where she doesn't, and she's one of these people who's always just, I don't know, real bright and thinking right in on the things that are happening right now, and, you know, the latest books and things like that. And
she just
keeps up with everything. She's just, I think probably the family, she's probably the one of the most intellect and just uses it, just constantly alert and going. And of course, you know, to see her, when I see her with her family, she doesn't ever bring in the, you know, the intellectual side, but it's still, it just carries over her the way she is. But she said she doesn't know. She says she feels like the teacher has to have something to give to the student. Well, what's he there for? And yet, how much part does the student play in teaching themselves? She says, you know, how much control should the teacher have over the class? Or how much should he let it go and let them do things?
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, now, you see, you've got to go in Emerson's portrait a little bit and see what they write about.
Yeah.
The last PMLA had a piece on his poetry. Now you realize, let me tell you, Suzanne, you realize that an article in PMLA gives you a professorship at any university. You realize that?
I kind of had an inkling that if you got into PMLA, you were doing really, you know, that was about tops in the field.
So they'll write any damn thing. You know that. To get into it, to get that. Well, now you haven't found, you don't know yet what your professor up here knows about Emerson.
Picard?
Yes. You have
some of it, yeah.
You have worked me over on any of it.
was all poetry.
I had my mind on other things. No, I didn't either. I had it on both things.
What did you do with your mind? Just lay it up every now and then?
No. I feel like I've been doing more of this core than I had before. No, it's there. That pulls on me too. I want to read it and look at that and talk to the cardinal. And I, you know, the other side kind of pulls.
What other side?
With Miss Mary and all. That part, the tape.
But all you did on this last part was to get it balled up.
Roy Emerson balled up too.
And if that is, she doesn't talk like that when you and I hear. That was beautiful talk. You just don't realize because you get into the tape how beautiful that was, that laughter. She took it over pretty quick.
Yeah, it was Theo.
She says, I talked to Louise Graham on the telephone.
That didn't happen until after Suzanne came.
No.
I think you bring out the...
No. I went back and listened to the talk before you came, and it was heavy.
Well, that part of Louise Graham you could see right away. Just, it's that same, I don't know what you'd call it, where she called Theo just hoping to get him and just ride him about, or just, you know, that sort of, to me, is pretty close to kidding, giving that fellow Castro, you know, the way she thinks about it.
Well, ma'am, we're not going in, and you come in with Suzanne.
Yeah.
There's no use. You all can, she needs to be
yeah, she doesn't mind.
Worked over a little bit. You come in. Worked over a little bit more.
Yeah.
Well, see, because I've been in a secret car just a little bit that I have it, it gives me, I feel like it gives me another view when I do read Emerson and Thoreau. When he talks about reality, I realize that he's using the philosophical concept of it. And whereas before I didn't, I just sort of ignored it. I mean, that's opening to me.
Well, he got that long passage in Self-Reliance, you see, that we skip over all of it. You see, that's his philosophical basis for what he said. But you don't give, you see, the point of it is, you don't give a damn about his philosophical basis. You want to know what he says about action, about experience. Now, you see, and it's the interpretation of action that they don't know how to do. And that's why they can't handle Emerson with the students. They get him on the philosophical side.
Well, that's the side I can get from Picard. I mean, just to know,
sure,
you know what it is. So,
well, now you want to get that in tow and line it out for me a little bit. See, I can.
Okay. I got it written down.
Well, now you're about to clear your decks, aren't you? Hmm?
No. Not if I go into that thing on Miss Mary again.
What are you going to do on that?
Well, I've got to put it in some kind of form and it'll work with it.
Oh, God, how long does it take you to do it?
It takes me a long time. It's hard.
Oh, why don't you do it like I do it? Oh, you're trying to write it out in legible, readable form, is that it?
Yeah, you know.
You ought to work along a little closer with me and get some shortcuts on it. Yeah, I see what you mean. But see, the way you work, you'd take up half a term doing that. You're
mm-hmm.
just sitting around looking at it, twiddling your fingers. You ought to do that in a couple of days and have it over with.
Well,
so
last week I took it and I spent 2 days and finished it. And for Thursday morning, it was ready.
Well,
the tape's not ready.
Just cut the other out and do that for a day, I guess.
Your working day must be sort of limited.
Yeah. It's not too limited now.
You have to, when you hit it, you know, just keep going.
Yeah.
Well, stay up at night, you just work during the day. I'd come to grips with that. But not I wouldn't put any time on it. Now, have you got a copy of that thing you gave Mr. Kirkpatrick?
Yeah.
Well, you ought to leave it on the desk where I can see what you're doing. I don't have to have a copy of all your stuff.
Okay.
And, I could work you over before you turn it in. But that's not necessary. Just let them work you over. Just draw blood. Just hope they do, you see. Yeah. It ought to hurt.
It will.
Oh, yeah.
You see, I would say in a lot of ways, as far as that goes, they are more perceptive in that sense than I am. In the craftsmanship now, whether it's, I feel like they miss a lot sometimes.
You can pick up what they see, can't you?
Yeah.
They see the same thing over and over again. They don't have any versatility.
That's what makes me sour and peevish, is because I see that. Every class I've been to, it's the same comments. That's the end of the story.
Well, you see, I've got some of these critical things that tied you over on that. It's that old egghead saying. It's egghead.
Oh.
Huh?
Just critical writing?
It's egghead criticism. I mean, that's just a term. Well, Suzanne, I'm going to tell you. You get into that, and then you can get in, I think, I'll tell you what, if you can get a little bit of Emerson, I can help you, and you can knock off a book in a month or two, if you put your mind to it. I mean, it's there, you've got the material.
Yeah, it's the material there.
And I'll, And hell, you can get it through one of the authorized publishers. And I wouldn't linger. I wouldn't linger. I just wouldn't play around with it. While you've got me to help you work along with you, just do it. Just go ahead, you see. Now, this is ahead of you. But you see, I'm a little ahead of you, too. You've got a great deal, to back it up. That's the thing of it. But I think Jim's sister, I think she's the one. Now, you don't need to go up there and talk to her. You can talk to her at night on long distance.
Well, I've asked her several times if she'd send me, I told her I'd pay for it. You send me drafts of what she's writing. Because she'd written a book.
Is it published?
No, they didn't take it. She's going to publish it as articles or rework it into articles.
Yeah.
But it's she said she'd like to skip Emerson completely. She says she can't handle it.
Well, tell her you can.
But she goes into Thoreau and Alcott and Channing, I think, and the Orpheus idea.
Well, she can see Roxy.
Yeah, that's what I told her. I said I'd pay for it, but she hadn't done it. Keep bugging her about it. She won't mind.
Tell her to send you one of the old copies, and you can look through it. She gets a new copy of the lipstick, and she can send it down to you. And if you use it, you can see Roxy yourself.
And that would be right interesting.
Yeah, because she's really sharp.
But now you see, you don't want to talk about this. But you see, you don't have a philosophical background. You see, people don't have that anymore. But you've got the critical background for an interpretation of Emerson. But you can't do it without the other. You see what I mean?
Without philosophical. You've got to know what he's doing.
You've got to know it.
Yeah.
You don't have to use it, but you have to know it.
Yeah.
And you see, I don't know it because I've never needed it. I didn't intend to publish anything in it. But you can. Once you publish something, you can go right on up. Just publish a little something. But it's easy to publish a big something. A couple of hundred pages you could publish. And if nobody will accept it, you can just have it done. Pay them to do it. You come out of here. Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, you see, when Picard opened that to me, and it made me realize what Emerson was doing there, sometimes inexperience, the idea of reality. Well, I realized. See, I took that one course in medieval philosophy, which was very, I liked it. And so I know sort of what he's talking about. I've got that in my background. I never went into it. But I got the outline of it, kind of. So I got. this is the first time I knew what he was doing there. So.
Well, of course, all those things help, but you see, the thing of it is, Emerson's influence didn't come through that. Not with Melville and with Whitman. It came through the experience.
Well, even Thoreau. To me, I get the feeling that he puts in the philosophical part because it's there and he feels like it ought to be there, but it's like that little thing on the hermit and the poet. You almost just rather go fishing.
Yeah. That's how it doesn't have much, does it?
In the philosophical part?
Yeah.
Most of it, as I've seen, it just comes right from Emerson.
Yeah. And he read some of the Indian Hindu writing. But
so for him, it's the influence made through experience and action.
Now you see what you can do. You can break a lance with the whole profession. With all those learned people. And just unhorse them. You can do it. You can unhorse them. You can knock them off the horses.